Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Big Ticket, Variety and iHeart's weekly podcast. I'm your host, Mark Malkin. Today, I've got James Marsden. I caught up with the actor on the phone from Vancouver, where he's filming the latest adaptation of The Stand, Stephen King's horror novel about a world destroyed by a supervirus. Stick around to hear what it's like filming that during the coronavirus outbreak. Plus, Marsden reveals what he did for the very first time to prepare to work alongside Cate Blanchett in the upcoming Mrs. America. He teases a return to Dead to Me, and then he reminisces about his X-Men audition. Of that and more coming up after the break. Welcome back to The Big Ticket. Here's James Marsden. How are you?
I'm great. How you doing?
Where am I calling you right now?
I'm on a planet called Mars. I'm out in the middle of, it feels actually a little Mars-like. I'm in Kamloops, Canada, which is about 4 hours drive east of Vancouver into the interior of BC. And it's a very high desert, arid spot for some cool drone shots for The Stand, Stephen King thing I'm working on.
Yeah, so tell me about this Stephen King thing you're working on, The Stand. It's only, you know, that little thing.
That little thing, one of his shortest books. yeah, it's pretty cool. It's right now, it's a CBS All Access thing. Josh Boone and Ben Cavell. Yeah, it's a pretty exciting thing to be a part of. I was also considering what's going on in the world at the moment.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know if you've read the book, but it's basically Stephen King's idea of how it all ends,
right.
Where a virus wipes out 99.4% of the population, and then 0.6 is immune to it, and they have to rebuild society. And it's pretty. It would be a cruel irony if the Stand happens before The Stand comes out.
Yeah, it has to be a little weird working on this, no?
It is. I'm hoping that we in real life get a hold of it before it reaches the catastrophic proportions it does in The Stand. But it definitely is an interesting sort of parallel universe going on.
It is a very strange time in the world. It is just, you know, it's like now, like even
it
in the
is.
Office, someone sneezes and everyone sort of flinches for a minute, you know?
Oh, there's scenes. I'm not giving too much away here, but there's scenes at the beginning of the Stand where, you know, as soon as you see someone who looks normal sneeze or cough into their arm, you know, your eyes just immediately, everyone in the room darts towards them, and I see that in public now.
Wow.
Everyone kind of takes a few steps away from the person, but it's crazy. I know we're in full panic mode right now.
Let's hope that they get a hold of coronavirus before The Stand is going to come out, because I just don't know who's going to want to watch The Stand while this is going on.
Right. I know, it's true, right? Sometimes these things can be, obviously no one would ever want to capitalize on something as horrible as this, but, it certainly makes it relevant. I hope that it also doesn't, I did this movie with Woody Harrelson and Tommy Lee Jones called Shock and Awe, and it was a political movie about the going to war with Iraq after 9/11. And it came out during the heat of the Trump madness, and no one was interested in seeing any sort of political movie at the time. So it didn't do that great. But it's, you know, the real life events definitely do have an effect on them. So I just don't think about it. Just keep chugging away.
Yeah, so it's a good thing that there's nothing going on with hedgehogs right now.
Right.
Because a lot of people have gone to see that movie.
Yes, except overseas in Asia. They haven't gotten to yet. But most of the people in the world have gotten to enjoy it. So we relied on a little bit of Sonic's speed to get done before, to get it out there before the madness began.
Right now, the number worldwide is 265 million.
Is that right? I haven't even looked recently. That's nutty. I mean, I got to tell you, it doesn't feel like these kind of things happen anymore. Right. I don't know. I mean, I remember the first X-Men movie and they were saying it made $54 million. It's a massive success. It'll go on to be a huge franchise and all of this. And, you know, and I've rarely experienced that kind of elation and amazement as to how many people are enjoying your product, your art, I should say. Yeah. but yeah, I to put it in terms of product, but you know, it just doesn't feel like, I guess, unless you're in a giant Marvel movie or you know, a big Pixar film or something, yeah. Kids movie, those middle tier movies, those, you know, $20 to $80 million movies don't seem like they come out much anymore. Right. And it's just nice to see the box office, you know, healthy and the people who still want to go to the movie theater.
How many Sonics are you signed up to do?
I believe, I don't know if I'm supposed to say, I believe as many as they want to make.
That was a good answer.
Which I'm
that was
fine
a good
with.
Save.
Yeah, right. That's my somewhat vague answer. But it is such a good group of people, and it was so much fun to see Jim enjoying himself again. Right. I think this was his second biggest opening of all of his movies.
Wow.
Or biggest opening weekend, I guess. Right. And I was kind of amazed at that statistic, but he just had a big smile on his face and was hugging everyone. And it just felt like it was such a cool thing. I mean, I obviously grew up, I was in high school emulating him and watching him on Living Color and doing his thing. Wow. And then for him to take a pretty little break from the business and come back, with the Showtime show and then this, and just, you know, chew the scenery in his most brilliant and amazing ways and just have fun doing it again. It was a real joy for me because he's always been an inspiration and it's cool to, you know, he's just putting his arm around everyone going, man, what a great ride. And I can't think of any better people to be experiencing this kind of success with, you know? So, it's been fun. You know, I've been doing this for 25 years and it's, you learn, you know, to not get your hopes up about certain things. You know, you're just, your expectations are going to get burned if you set them the wrong way. So you kind of just do the work and you trust that you like your contribution to it. And then you move on to the next thing and whatever is going to excite you about whatever the next job you're doing. And then you kind of forget about the other ones. Right. So when something like this happens, it's like, man, this is a, you know, global big success. And it's cool. It's a fun, it's a good wave to enjoy the ride. You know, it's yeah, you don't expect it to always be them to always be that way. But when they hit, it's a good thing.
So tell me about what's your favorite thing at Olive Garden? Because you did get that gift certificate. No spoilers, but I feel like you could walk into an Olive Garden and just be like, I was in Sonic the Hedgehog. Thank you. I'll have the best table in the house.
Right. Not even that. I'm just going to walk in and go, you know who I am. You know what I'll have. I didn't even know where that came from. It was always in the script. It never left. And there you go. That's some shameless product promotion there, right? We've been to about 3 or 4 screenings, test screenings, but also, like, you know, live screenings. Ben Schwartz and I went to and surprised some of the moviegoers at the end and the beginning of some of the random screenings, and staying towards the end, the Olive Garden joke, when I don't want to ruin anything, but like when I, you know, the bit with the Olive Garden towards the end of the movie, right, every time gets the biggest laugh of the movie, every time. It's the biggest laugh of the movie. You can count on it. So it's just like, you know, it's another thing. You watch the movie and you think certain jokes are going to be the ones that kill, and you're always wrong. So it's just, you know, you lack objectivity when it comes to these things sometimes.
So not so funny, more seriousness, Mrs. America.
Right.
Phyllis Schlafly.
Yeah, my goodness.
Oh, boy. Oh, my goodness.
Right.
Remind people who Phyllis is.
So Phyllis Schlafly was a extremely conservative Republican advocate back in the time of when Gloria Steinem and Bill Abzug were hell-bent on ratifying the Equal Rights Amendment. Yeah. And she was doing everything she could to stop that from happening because she believed that a woman's place was being a homemaker and raising children and not getting drafted to war, which was another big component of her argument. One of her more powerful allies was an Illinois congressman named Phil Crane, and that's who I play in the show. And he was known as the conservative Kennedy. He's very, very intelligent, very charming, but very, very conservative. And they kind of helped each other with their agendas and their objectives in the middle of the equal rights movement. And so I can't, depending on who's listening, I don't know whether or not you think Kate Blanchett and I's character are good guys or bad guys. but talk about another relevant, really relevant, interesting topic and story to be told during these days right now, right. And also, and just at the end of the day for me, what a wonderful platform to go out and support these incredible female actresses in these roles that are just, incredible. They're the roles that everybody wants. Sarah Paulson and Elizabeth Banks and Rose Byrne. And so, yeah, it's cool. It's a great, cool thing to be a part of. I mean, it's definitely their show, but I feel very lucky to be a part of it.
So Kate Blanchett plays Phyllis Schlafly. What was it like your first day on set with Kate Blanchett?
Well, good question. I didn't know if my first day on set would finish. Maybe I'd get fired halfway through. You never know. She's a heavy hitter, and you got to know that you can hang with her.
Right.
I've never been more prepared in my life, to be honest with you.
Really?
I haven't never done this before, and I'm going to start doing it a lot more because it was massively helpful. I enlisted the help of a very well-known and renowned acting coach. Mm. And I just spent session and session with her with all the material, discussing not only the historical, the actual history of the story that we were telling, but also the scenes and, kind of getting an idea of, from a woman's perspective, where Kate was going to be coming from or where she might and where she might not. And so that I just was beyond prepared. And it was a great feeling because you'd step on the set and it was her first day as well. It was the very first day of shooting was some of our biggest stuff.
Wow.
So it was cool. It was a reminder of how important preparation is, and so that you just can, when the cameras start rolling, you just feel as comfortable as you can be. Obviously she's not going to want to see anybody struggling or feeling intimidated by her, and she's one of the most warm and generous artists that I've ever worked with. She wants everyone around her to be great, and so it was, I chewed my nails off that day. But ultimately it worked out. It was a lot of fun. And it's another reminder of how much working with a talented actress of Kate's caliber can bring out so much more in you. And how important and helpful that is to be, to be sort of sparring, three or four page dialogue scenes with the great Kate. It's pretty cool.
Now, do you say to Kate, by the way, I've never done this before, but I got an acting coach because of you.
No, because I didn't want her to see her. I didn't want her to see the mechanics behind what I was doing. It was like a chess match, I didn't want to. I didn't want to show her my thought process. I think I maybe did later on in the season. She has a great sense of humor, so I would. She would probably. She would probably be very happy, thankful, and respect the fact that I did that. I mean, it would sound arrogant, though, wouldn't it? Like, hey, normally I don't need this. Normally that's I'm just right. fine with my instincts. But for you, yeah, I got a little extra training, so look out.
Did
you think you're going to get nominated for awards for this? Watch out. Yeah.
Did you reach out to anyone who knew Phyllis or knew Phil, you know, Phil Crane?
No, you know, I didn't. But a funny story, my father used to work in D.C. He lived there for mm-hmm. about 15 years, and he was never in politics, but he was a microbiologist who worked with the Food and Drug Administration. He's the American Meat Institute. He was a food handling processing, oversaw like inspection. Anytime there was E. coli or anything like that, he's like the main guy. Like, anyway, so they used to have these, I forget what the company was for, maybe American Meat Institute or something. They would have these like, hot dog cookouts on the Saturdays, and they would invite a lot of politicians. And I told him I was playing Phil Crane. He goes, I knew Phil Crane.
Whoa.
I was like, you're kidding me. That's crazy. He goes, yeah, I had several conversations with him many, many, many times. Very nice guy. Very charming. But my father was the one person who actually weirdly knew Phil Crane.
That's wild. How do you even go to that mindset? I mean, for people who don't know, I mean, Phyllis Schlafly, Phil Crane, I mean, these were as conservative as you could possibly get. I mean, it is the right wing of the right wing. How do you even, like, when I watch the trailer and I see Kate spewing some of that stuff, it's just, it's so odd. But like, you know, like you said, it plays to today.
Yeah, right. Well, I think, you know, first of all, she was such a character. Right. And, you know, Kate just like latches onto these incredible personalities, and she just makes them her own. I think it's just great to have, you know, someone as great as Kate Blanchett to be playing, you know, the antagonist, you know, to be mm-hmm. like, in some regard, I don't think this is a, you know, straight up good and bad people kind of thing, but it's certainly a really intelligent way to hear the other side of the argument. Mm-hmm. And where that came from, and, you know, cause there are some really convincing arguments that she has in the show, like, okay, well that kind of makes sense. That shouldn't be without equality, in the workforce or anywhere between men and women. But, you know, it's an interesting way to present the argument of what was going on, you know, in the early 70s and led up to the right. you know, 80s, obviously, having Kate be the one who's, you know, there's moments where you kind of go, I might be mixed on this. I might be split right down the middle on this. To see, you know, and ultimately, you know, we see that, it's not a good thing. But like, you know, I get certain simple things, like, you know, there shouldn't be, you shouldn't be, we shouldn't be devaluing women that do want to stay home and raise their kids and be a homemaker and do, you know, that's obviously, that's an incredibly difficult job and an important one. But we should not limit them to that.
Right. They shouldn't be forced just to do that.
Right. Exactly. Yes. And that's something that we continue to evolve towards, which is a good thing, right? That ultimate equal opportunity. And it's right now, obviously, this is something that we talk about quite a lot in these days.
Now I'm going to take another short break, but when we come back, Marsden talks about the 20th anniversary of X-Men. You won't believe what he did for his audition. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Here's more of James Marsden. So now let's talk Dead to Me. Are you coming back or what? Everybody wants to know.
So you got the ones that we could talk about out of the way, right?
Right. And I was just gonna. Well, I was just gonna laugh.
Yeah, your imagination is gonna have to run wild if you try to figure out if and how I would come back. If you know how the first season ended, but yes, I'm. I've written in blood that I'm not allowed to. It stays in the vault.
Right. You can't even say if you were on the show originally.
Right. Yeah, exactly. That's the death time we live in nowadays. There's too many spoilers out there. But it was such another surprise. I not that I didn't think it was going to do poorly. It was something that I did right on the heels of Sonic.
Right.
And I was so tired. No one wants to hear about actors complaining about being tired, but I was. acting is the hardest job in the world. People don't realize it. No, but I would, I hadn't been home and I hadn't seen my kids for a while. And they said, hey, this is a show that Liz Feldman, and I'm a fan of hers as a writer. And they're interested in you for this role in this show with Linda and Christina. And it'd be, 2 months, if that. It's in LA, and here's the character. Here's the first couple of scripts. Are you interested? And I was like, oh, this seems like so fun. And I have a real interesting way of a take on playing this guy. I know I'm tired, but at least I'll be in LA. Let's go for it. And again, another one that was like, who knows? There's so right. much content out there right now, and so many platforms. Yeah, there's so much TV. It's great because, there's something for everybody, and you can watch it whenever you want. If it's Netflix, right? You can stream it whenever you want, and it's so accessible nowadays that you can actually get to most of the contents. But it does make you kind of go, who is there enough people in the world to watch all of these shows that are right. being made? There's right. so much I haven't seen.
So
it's always a surprise when something like. That came out and got shot out of a cannon. It was like, this is the best show. This is my favorite show on Netflix. And so again, another surprise, which was pretty cool. And as for the second season, if you probably did some snooping around on the internet, there may or may not be some photos of me
somewhere doing something
on set. I don't know. but in what capacity, I won't be able to tell you.
Right. Let's take a little trip back to two of your classics. First up, 20th anniversary of X-Men this year. 20 years.
My gosh, yeah. It's beyond comprehension for me.
Do you remember your first day on set?
I do. But mostly I remember the first day in the costumes. That I think that actually was the first day of shooting, to be honest with you. We were at the base of the Statue of Liberty in our full one piece black leather X-Men costumes that the leather had not been worn in yet. So we're meant to be vaulting over this wall, very athletic, athletic superhero style. And neither one of us could get over a 2.5 foot wall. because the suits didn't allow for much bending of the legs and of the body anywhere. So we just, there's video out there of Hugh and I just kind of falling on our face on this cement wall. And it was like, wait, oh God, these are the superheroes.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. So with the magic of movie making, eventually we looked pretty cool. But that first day, we did not feel pretty cool.
Did you have to audition for the movie?
I did.
So what was your audition like?
It was a lot of, I went in maybe 4 or 5 times over the course of 3 months. And it was a lot of reading. There was a couple of readings with Famke. And I remember how tall she was. So I was like, I'm just going to wear my biggest boots possible because I can't be shorter than her. I know they won't cast me.
You came in a pair of stilettos.
Oh, yeah. I came in a pair of stilettos with, with an Apple box duct taped to both feet. Yeah, I remember also wearing a tight fitting t-shirt, and I remember going into the bathroom before the auditions every time and locking the door and putting like paper towels down on the floor and doing push-ups, as many push-ups as I could, and like doing like arm curls in the mirror to get like my, you know, just to kind of get a pump on. Because at the time it was like there hadn't been really any superhero movies other
than.
I mean, like Batman, the original Batman with Michael Keaton, and then you know the ones that followed. But Phantom. I mean, it wasn't. This is like a new take on the genre, and it was you know Bryan Singer's take was let's make this as kind of real and with very important themes and kind of you know dark as possible. And there's no you know goofy spandex costumes and. I don't know. I just was like, I didn't know what that entailed. It's like, I just got to, I got to look like I'm in good physical shape. So I was working out in the bathroom before the audition.
Wow. I love that story.
Yeah.
The Enchanted sequel. When is it happening? Cause,
you know,
apparently there was a meeting.
Yeah, yes. I keep hearing things surface and it feels like, you know, it's trying to get some traction. I know Bob Iger just left Disney. I don't know if that affects it at all, but it is a little bit of a, you know, we didn't do the sequel to Enchanted back in the day. I mean, obviously, it was a massive success, but I was always confused why we didn't do it back in the day. Back in, whatever, 2007, I guess, when the movie came out to announce a sequel. But there was a whole changing of the guards going on at Disney. Right. And at the time, and it kind of fell through the cracks, I think, sadly, because it would have been an immediate green light nowadays. So I think they've been trying to resurrect it, and I know there's interest there, and I've heard that the Schwartz and the Menkins are talking, and Disney and Amy's interested, and I'm interested, and I mean, it would just be so much fun. That was like the most fun I've ever had on a movie. It was a role that I just enjoyed. You know, I went to set every day grinning from ear to ear playing this dope who's just an unabashed romantic and loves the sound of his own voice. And it was just like one of those roles that you read and you go, I got this, you know. sometimes you read a role and you're like, okay, I really want to get this right. It's a really challenging role. But up until the day you start shooting, you're like, okay, well, what choices am I going to make? And what, you know, day one is tomorrow. Once I figure out what this guy looks like, sounds like, and what is the choices are going to be, you're kind of locked in. Yeah. And, Prince Edward was out of the gate, like, oh, I know exactly who this guy is. You know? So I hope we get to do it. I mean, before we, you know, pretty soon I'm not going to be agile and young enough to be jumping around on top of buses swinging swords.
Enchanted wheelchairs.
They would have to write it into the script. but hey, I'd be down for it. Enchanted wheelchairs.
Well, Mr. James, thank you for this. This is great. I'm going to let you get back to work.
Yeah, of course.
And hopefully I'll see you soon.
I hope so too. It's been a pleasure. And I thanks for taking the time out.
You got it, buddy. That was James Marsden. Thanks for listening to this episode of The Big Ticket. Coming up next week, Shania Twain. And of course, don't forget to follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Mark Malkin. And for all the latest breaking Hollywood news, go to Variety.com. See you next time.